Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
So this month, there's a particular holiday. Does anyone know? Right in the middle of the month. Right, okay, exactly. And often, what do we do on Valentine's Day? Okay, eat candy. That wasn't the answer I was looking for, but yes, eat candy. Yeah. Send Valentine's, and what are those usually telling other people? I love you. We share our love with people, right? And sometimes we view this day as mostly about romantic love, especially as we get older. But we're actually going to spend the entire month this month talking about love in some of its many varied forms. We'll talk about what it's like to love our family and our friends, those closest to us. We'll talk about loving the whole of the human family that's spread all across this wide earth, people we've never met and will never meet. We'll talk about what it's like to feel a sense of love for all that is, the entire impossible cosmos and all that goes on in it, the good and the bad. And then today, we're going to start by talking about loving ourselves. Now, the reason we're going to talk about love so much this month, all four Sundays, is because love has a power beyond our imagining. And the Universalists of Unitarian Universalism knew this. They knew that love was the only thing that could save the world, that could change everything. And we know this too, although we might not put it that way on a daily basis. But we know the power that love has. Take a minute and try to remember the first time that you knew someone loved you, whether it was a parent or a friend or whatever. Just remember what it felt like. Hold that feeling as I offer you the poetry of Mark Bellatini, UU minister and poet, as our call to worship this morning. Mark writes, "Love, you are strong as a dark blue mountain. Love, you are as fluid as a wide silver river. Love, you are as splendid as a clear night sky. Love, you are as mysterious as a dark forest. Love, you are as wise as enduring friendship. Love, you are true power, not mere distraction. Truth, not deceit. Purpose, not impulse. Poetry, not prose. Sing, not sang. Now more than tomorrow, but tomorrow more than yesterday. Love, condense yourself into this moment. Permeate the silence that joins us in community so that in the fire of the words to come, the promises of this hour might be sealed in peace." Aware that love is strong and wide and deep and powerful, aware that each of us has the capacity to offer love to others and also to ourselves, we gather together this morning. This morning, as we move into our weekly time for meditation and reflection, I want to share with you some news from our community. Many of you may have known Marian Arenas. She was a longtime member of this congregation. She died earlier this week, and so I ask you to hold Marian and her family and all who loved her in your hearts as we come into our time for reflection together. I invite you to take a deep breath in and slowly let it out. As you take another deep breath in, settle your feet onto the floor. Relax your mind and your body. Keep breathing in deeply and slowly. Roll your shoulders back. Let your jaw unclench. Focus on those deep breaths as they move in and out of your body. And as you breathe, imagine with each deep breath in, you are breathing in love. And with each breath out, you are breathing out love. Increasing the love in your own heart and in the world with each deep breath. Breathe deeply as we come to silence together. With every breath we take, may the love in this world increase. So may it be. So earlier this week, I got some news I didn't like. It wasn't anything horrible, but it left me feeling a little bit sad. And of course, the news came as I was on my way to pick up my kids, and there was not a free moment to process. And I found, unsurprisingly, that although I'm pretty skilled at putting things to the side so that I can do what needs to be done, I was less patient, more frustrated, more irritable than I would normally be. And I knew why. It was exactly because I hadn't had the chance to deal with my own disappointment. I hadn't had the chance to tend to myself, and it made it harder to tend to my children with the wholeness and fullness that I prefer to bring to them. It's been longer than I'd like to admit since I was on an airplane, but I imagine the safety instructions are still the same. You know, that part when the flight attendant gets up in the middle and does the miming of the different safety things and points to the booklet, and they always say, they tell you if there's a change in the cabin pressure, that the oxygen masks are going to drop down, and that you need to put your own on first before you put on for children or anyone else around you that needs help, right? If you don't, if you start working on everyone else before you ensure your own safety, then you'll likely pass out from a lack of oxygen and you're going to be no use to anyone. That's the rule. Put your own on first and then you help. We often experience cabin pressure drops in our own lives. We stumble, things change, there's tragedy in the news, we get disappointing personal news. There are so many things that happen to us that leave us needing to take care of ourselves. And when we don't, we end up less able to care for others. And yet many of us are not taught well how to care for ourselves. Or what's worse, many of us are taught that we're not worth caring for. Many of us walk around with self-images that are fundamentally damaged, with voices quietly undermining our ability to care for ourselves and thus to care for other people in the world. How many of us have those internal voices saying, my hands are too big, or my eyes are too small, or too brown, or too close together? My hair is too straight, too red, too blonde. I'm too short, I'm too tall, I'm too skinny, I'm too fat. To this, to that. How many of us have those internal voices saying, I'm not smart enough, or assertive enough, or spontaneous enough. I'm not witty enough, rich enough, wise enough, deep enough. I'm not fun enough. Not enough. How many of us have those internal voices saying, I should be prettier, I should be smarter, I should be taller, I should have bluer eyes, I should be less assertive, less shy, more shy. I should act like a girl, I should act like a boy, I should be straight, I should be different from what I am. Should. But why? Who needs us to be anything other than who we are? Who are we too much for? Who are we not enough for? For whom should we be anything other than what we are? Is it for ourselves? Is it for our friends, our family? Why? There are some things that I believe very firmly. One of those things is that I believe people need love. Human beings need love like they need air and like they need water. And I believe that part of the reason that we are in some of the struggles we are in as a society is because we aren't doing that quite right. I believe that generation after generation isn't grasping the value of the lives of their fellow people and isn't grasping the value of their own lives. I know that some would argue that part of our problem is that we grasp too quickly our own value and thus act out of selfishness or self-interest. And I see that too. But I think it's not the same. Self-interest, selfishness, these are not the same as a deep and spiritual sense of self-love. They just aren't. I believe that we're not learning to love ourselves for who we are, that we are among our own harshest critics. And we struggle then to teach our children a skill we don't have. We struggle to teach them what it looks like to love themselves for just who they are. And I do actually believe that if everyone could do that, if everybody could love themselves for who they are and model that in the world, the fear and the anger and the lashing out and beating each other down would stop because no one would have anything left to prove. I believe that the people who bully and are bullied alike need to learn to love themselves, and then we might have a chance at turning around the trends of violence and anger and distance. I feel confident saying that everyone in this room has said to themselves one of or some version of those, I'm too this, too that, I'm not enough this, or I should be that. Or maybe you've said to yourself something even more harsh or more unkind, more unloving. I know that each and every person in this room has wished at least once in their lifetime to be different than how they are. Maybe you've actually even thought about what it would be like to go ahead and live a lie, live differently. Or maybe you've already been forced to live a lie for longer years than you want to admit. Maybe you've lived as one gender knowing deep down that's not who you are, or maybe you've lived as a heterosexual knowing that's not who you are. Or maybe you live each day wishing the body you saw in the mirror was different because it doesn't fit some image you've been told to think is ideal. We all know to some degree at least what it feels like to want to be something other than ourselves, to wish we could change something. In this morning's reading, Noah Cho writes about his sense, even through marriage and fathering children, that he is unattractive. Nothing his wife tells him changes his mind. The negative messages inevitably outweigh the positive. Right in his own home, growing up, he saw a man like him, his father, who was loved. Right in his own home now, as he wrote that piece, he sees a woman who loves him and tells him he's attractive. And yet even those real life, personal, in his own home affirmations can't erase the broader messaging he experienced in media, pop culture, the external society. Despite what he's told by people who truly love him, he questions his attractiveness and by extension, his worth and lovability in a society that values such things highly. We've all experienced moments of self-doubt. Moments when the messages we receive from the media, sometimes even from our own friends and family, from our world, tell us that something unchangeable about us isn't good enough, is wrong, or needs to be changed. But those messages are what is wrong. That's what needs to change. Our first principle teaches us that each person has inherent worth and dignity, regardless of their gender or sex or orientation, their wealth, their status, their weight, their height, their coloring, their race, ethnicity, background. Everyone has inherent worth and dignity. And I'll talk about that a lot, and you'll hear me say often that also the first principle seems to me the hardest to truly live by, that it is our most difficult principle. because it asks us to separate a person's actions from their fundamental worth as a human being. Part of why that's so hard is that it asks us to do this for all people, including ourselves. Sometimes we make bad choices. All people make bad choices. Sometimes we're rude or unkind. We're not as patient as we want to be. And for those things, yes, it is fair to remind ourselves of who we want to be and to try to achieve that. But when we start in on ourselves for the things we can't change, things that are natural to us and our beings, our skin color, our bone structure, our height, our size, our gender, our sex, who we love, our intelligence, our sense of humor, our desire to be social, our age, our wrinkles, our shyness. When we start berating ourselves over things that make us who we are, we are hardly including ourselves in that first principle ideal. When I say I hate my hair or I'm not smart enough, the message I'm actually sending myself and anyone around me who's watching that and hearing me, like my children or my family, the message I'm sending myself is, you're not enough. You're not worthy as you are. You're not loved as you are. And then right there, I'm caught in a trap of my own theology. I believe in the first principle deeply. I believe that each of us, though we may have ways we want to improve our behavior in the world, each of us is worthy. Each of us is loved. Each of us is truly beautiful. All of you. You, as you are in this moment, as you sit in your chair with whatever flaws you think you have, you are worthy and you are loved and you are enough. And anyone who tries to make any of us feel otherwise isn't giving us the respect that the first principle demands. I know many of you have heard of Brené Brown. She's a researcher and writer from Texas. Her work is on vulnerability, on shame, on fear. The core of her work attempts to validate vulnerability, to remind all of us that being vulnerable is actually a way of being powerful, of being courageous and wholehearted in the world. She also writes on shame, and she makes a very important distinction between shame and guilt. Shame, she writes, is a feeling that our imperfections, either as we understand them or as they are messaged to us by the outside world, that our imperfections make us unworthy of love. That's what shame is. The belief that our imperfections make us unworthy of love, make us less than or not enough, make us unworthy of connection. And that does, it stands in stark contrast to guilt. Guilt, she says, is the sense of discomfort we feel when we hold up something we've done or not done and examine it in light of our values. Guilt, she says, is productive. It can help us to course correct, stay on track with our ideals and who we want to be. Shame, on the other hand, is not productive. It is the intensely painful feeling, she writes, the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. Shame is not productive. It's what we feel when we look in the mirror and we see ourselves as unlovable. Shame is not something we're taught to deal with very well. In fact, more often than not, we're taught to keep the feelings of shame deep inside, and then you get into the shame spiral where you're ashamed that you're ashamed, and it all just goes down and down and down. And the problem is when we do that, when we tuck it away, it takes away the chance that someone might step in and offer us affirmation in the face of our shame. We tuck them away because we're afraid to be vulnerable. And so we live in this state of fear that keeps us even more disconnected from other people. We neglect to put on that oxygen mask and we isolate ourselves. So what would it look like to not do that? One way would be to let ourselves be vulnerable with others, to share that shame and let someone else step in and affirm us for who we are. But we can also do this work for ourselves. We can learn to do this work for ourselves. The Buddhist teacher and therapist Tara Brach has a work called Radical Acceptance. And I think it has a bit of the answer. Radical acceptance, she says, is clearly seeing what is true about us and treating it with compassion. We have to see clearly, know deeply who we are, and then begin to affirm and accept it by treating ourselves with compassion. I think that's what it looks like to affirm in the face of internally or externally created shame. We have to see what is true and then treat ourselves kindly. We have to be able to say, over here, this is a thing I did and I'm not proud of it, but this, who I am, me, I am still worthy. Or we have to be able to say, this is who I am, and they might think that this part of me makes me unworthy, but I know better. We have to be able to respond to ourselves with compassion and kindness when we feel shame. We have to be able to respond to ourselves with love. Think about the number of times you've said to a friend or a family member, somebody that you love, think about the number of times you've said, in spite of this thing you did, in spite of these ways that you are, or because of these ways that you are, I love you, I see you, you are beautiful. Think about love letters you've written, thank you notes, letters of support. Think about the acts of kindness you've done for others just as a form of appreciation to let them know someone cares about them as they are. And how often have you done that for yourself? How often have you been able to say in the face of your own self-doubt that you, with all your perceived flaws, are still worthy? You, with all your self-doubts and confusions, are still loved. We forget to say these things to ourselves, but we have a responsibility to offer compassion and gentleness. We have a responsibility to teach children and youth how to do that, how to model that, how to love themselves in the face of hatred from the outside. And we can't do it, we can't teach it, if we don't know how to do it for ourselves. If we want to model it, we have to actually model it. I truly believe that one of the ways to start changing the anger and the bigotry and all of the hatred that seems to be seeping out all over is beginning to learn this radical acceptance. The acceptance that goes further than just that, further than just accepting, and goes into embracing and affirming and loving. And we can only teach that radical acceptance by learning to embody it and offer it to ourselves. When we can do that, when we can look in the mirror and see something other than disappointment looking back, when we can look in the mirror, and I want to pause because I know some of you are starting to think about that old Saturday Night Live skit with Al Franken and Stuart Smalley where he looks in the mirror and he's like, I'm good enough, people like me. I know somebody knows what I'm talking about. So put that sort of goofy image aside. When you can actually look in the mirror and honestly say, you are worthy. You are enough as you are. You are beautiful. You belong. You are loved. When you can do that, when we can all do that, we will start to exist in the world in a different way. I'm going to push you a little bit and ask you to help me. We're going to end our service with an exercise in self-directed compassion, okay? And this is actually an exercise that I wrote for a children's chapel many years ago, but I want for myself and for each of you the same thing that I want for all of the children and youth, which is a stronger sense of self-love. I want them to grow up with a deep core sense of their own worth, right? That they are part of the first principle. Because it's really easy to hear that and direct it outwards instead of directing it inwards. I want our children and our youth to know that they are loved and they belong in their bodies, in their families, in this world, in their own lives. And I want the same thing for all of us. So the exercise we're going to do is something that you can do for yourself whenever you have those moments of self-doubt. And it may feel a little silly because it will feel perhaps a little vulnerable. Closing your eyes and using your imagination, especially as an adult, for some reason can feel uncomfortable and vulnerable. So do what feels right, but also please try to push yourself a little bit. Trust in the process. Try not to worry about what you're going to look like and just try to bring your whole self to the exercise, okay? So close your eyes if it feels comfortable. And put your hands on your knees or your lap or your belly, wherever feels right. Take a very deep breath. Try to be very quiet. Take another very deep breath. Listen to the sound of your breathing, the breathing in the room. Keep breathing deeply and listen. Take a moment to think of an object, a thing that you love. Maybe your home, the ocean, trees, flowers, some material object that you love. In your mind, and with your arms, if you are so moved, give it a great big hug. Hold it close, show it you care for it in a great big hug. Take another deep breath and release that object. Now imagine some person you love. Maybe a friend, a brother, a sister, a parent, grandparent, a child. Think of that person. Imagine their face and their voice. Think about all the things you love about them. And then in your mind or with your arms, give them a great big hug. A tight squeeze, showing all the things you love about them. Take another deep breath and release that person. And now think of yourself. Imagine your own face as if you were looking in a mirror. See your own eyes, your mouth, your nose, your skin, your body, all of yourself. Think about who you are, your characteristics, physical, emotional, and mental. Imagine your face when you're happy and smiling. Imagine your face when you're sad and crying. When you're scared or excited or nervous or having fun. When you're angry or laughing. Imagine your whole self. All of who you are. Your deepest, truest, most real self. And reach your arms up and give yourself a big hug. Squeeze tightly, showing yourself love, and keep breathing, keep hugging. Sometimes it can be hard to remember to love ourselves. But you, just as you are a unique, wonderful being that has so much love to give and is loved so much. May we continue to cultivate the deep knowledge of our own worth. May each of us come into a soulful understanding of our own loveliness. May we know our own beauty even when others demean us. May we have the strength to love ourselves, committed to living our most honest and truest lives as forces of compassion, kindness, and gentleness in this world. Take a deep breath, and you can let go.